Hello and welcome to this week's version of Dollars and Cents presented by North Main Financial. I'm your host, Joshua Dobie. Thank you so much for hanging with us here. The 4 o'clock hour, if you're a 9 to 5, but we got 53 minutes, 38 seconds until we hit the finish line. And I appreciate so much you including us in that mix as you're looking towards the end of the day here on Dollars and Cents presented by North Main Financial. Now, you know, as a previous listener to the show, we're talking on any number of subjects. We're going to be doing that again here today. It's earnings season. I'll warn you, and I'm excited, as I always am, when it's earnings time to hear from our publicly traded companies about the good things they're seeing, the not so good things they're seeing. It's one of the most direct ways that we can get an understanding about different industries, different companies, how they see not only where they are, but as things are going forward. So we're going to look at things, some in a positive light, some in a not so positive light, based upon where the company fortunes may be right now. But you remember, again, as a previous listener to Dollars and Cents, that nothing that we're talking about here is intended as a specific recommendation for you. Meaning that even though we're going to be talking about these companies, and we're going to list them by name in many instances, we're going to use their ticker symbols to identify them, that again, in doing so, everybody's situation is unique. We strongly, strongly recommend that you reach out to your tax advisor, to your financial advisor, or if you'd like to reach out to us at North Main Financial Group, love to hear from you. Love to chat about your particular financial situation to see if there are ways in which we might be able to be helpful to you. Online, you can find us at northmainfinancial.com. That's north like the direction, main like the street, financial.com, northmainfinancial.com. We have a contact page on there. Leave us an email address or a phone number. Let us know the most preferred and desirable ways for us to contact you. Again, at northmainfinancial.com. All right, let's get into it. What's hot? I mean, when we're talking about what's hot during earnings season, it's really hard to get beyond just the slew of earnings reports, the 10-Ks that get filed with the SEC by publicly traded companies indicating what they saw, what they experienced, rather, for the past quarter and what they see going forward under Regulation FD or financial disclosure about what they see going forward. So I'm going to start with the biggest one. And actually, it's happening in real time right now. I may be able to bring you some updated data as we make our way through today's show. But one of the biggest ones is announcing right now, and that's Apple, ticker symbol Alpha Alpha Paul Larry, coming out with quarterly earnings here, literally as of the time of this live broadcast or as of the time of this podcast recording, if you happen to be listening to the recording. And I start out with Apple, A, to make you aware that earnings are going to be reported here literally in real time. But because they're one of the most widely held, largest publicly traded companies in the world. And so as Apple goes, so does much of our economy. Now, it's not the only company and certainly isn't exclusive to our understanding about where we are economically, but it is a big, big blue chip company. And we want to be mindful of what they see out there, because certainly as they see that, that is a big indication of how the consumer is spending, whether it's on iPhones, iPads, on the hardware side, on the services side, with the music end of things or the streaming service for Apple. So it's a very good indicator about, let's call it, the strength of the consumer. And you remember as a previous listener to Dollars and Cents, I say a lot about how the consumer is such a huge part of us economically, meaning about 2/3 to 3/4 of our economy is a function of consumer spending. So we want to be very mindful. We're going to be watching it. If I happen to see it during break, during one of our breaks here today about where earnings are, I'll bring them up to you. But I want to make sure you're aware of it, that they're out there and they're going to be reporting here. All right, let's keep going on the earnings end of things. Going to bring one, certainly, and this is what's hot. This company is very, very popular. This is one that I'm sure is familiar to you if you track any of the financial markets. And certainly their founder and CEO is really one of the most, let's say, widely known CEOs right now around the world. And yes, I'm talking about Tesla and I'm talking about Elon Musk. And I'm specifically talking about some news that came out this week, which frankly I found surprising. And that's just a sidebar there, my personal feelings on it. Found surprising coming out of Tesla. In short, what they did is they cut back on the majority of their workforce, both on the production side and on the sales side, for the production of their superchargers. And the superchargers, if you happen to own an electric vehicle, those are those Tesla-branded chargers that you will see in shopping mall parking lots or sometimes in hotel parking lots or other public areas where Teslas and sometimes non-Teslas, if they have a converter, are able to charge their vehicles very quickly. And I say that it's very quickly because it's different than, let's call it, a standard charger, which may take an extended period of time for you to charge your electric vehicle or won't charge nearly as fast as the supercharger. I raise this, A, because Tesla and Elon Musk are obviously very well known, but B, this also puts, let's say, at least a damper on the movement towards a nationwide system of chargers. If you own an electric vehicle, you know exactly what I'm describing. If you're going to take an extended trip, meaning something more than just in your local area and coming back to your home or your residence and charging it each night overnight, if you're taking an extended trip, you need to be mindful of where chargers are along the way and also to get you back. And superchargers, certainly from a time management standpoint, much more efficient, much more of an ease to use kind of entity in using your electric vehicle. And so it really throws a little bit more into question about how long it's going to take. Maybe there are going to be other competitors who get into the supercharger market as well. And that will be interesting to see. But this also comes in conjunction with a previous announcement from Tesla that they're going to be letting go of about 10% of their overall global workforce. So definitely cutting back on expenses there at Tesla. But also when we look at the EV market or electric vehicle market overall, definitely have seen significant slowdown here over the last year and a half. And meaning that we're seeing significant increases in EV inventories, not just at Tesla, but across every manufacturer right now, significant increase in EV inventories, definite slowdown in sales. And so I think we're starting to see now some of the effects of that and what that's meaning in terms of the business model. So what does that mean going forward? Don't have a complete answer to that, but definitely these companies are starting to make choices about cutting their overhead, cutting their expenses as sales have been slowing. So it's a very interesting phenomenon, again, coming out from Tesla, specifically on the supercharger side of things, where they're paring back on that end. I could see it maybe more on the production side for vehicles, but then with the supercharger group, very interesting to see that. So we're going to be watching that ongoing as well. Another item on the commodity side, again, thinking about what's hot. You heard us talk about this on a previous show here on Dollars and Cents. We're talking, you know, when we're talking about stock prices, sometimes we're talking about commodity prices. Commodities are very often raw materials or food, based materials or base food products. One of them we talked about here probably a couple of months ago now was the price of cocoa, and specifically cocoa as the base product for chocolate. So if you're like me and you love all things food related, definitely hit my radar screen. It was a point that I was keeping in mind. But when we looked at it, it had spiked dramatically. It had gone up over 300% in the course of a year, up over $12,000 per metric ton for cocoa. It was amazing to see that. It was due to some production issues, some growth issues, some storm issues, definitely some supply chain issues. It was a whole collection of things that really played into that spike in pricing. Well, I'm saying all of that to say now what we've seen here over the last couple of months, very interesting, as some of those things have been ironed out. We've moved from approximately $12,000 a metric ton all the way back down to $7,500. So very interesting to see that kind of thing. Very interesting to know that that's kind of things out there. That's supply and demand, folks. That's kind of how that stuff works. Well, we're going to take a few seconds here as we hear from our sponsors here on WSIC. I appreciate so much you spending the time here on Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial.
There's more of Dollars and Cents with certified financial planner Joshua Dobie on the way from 105.9 100.7 WSIC. We are back now with more of Dollars and Cents with your host, certified financial planner Joshua Dobie on 105.9 100.7 WSIC.
Hello and welcome back to the second quarter here of Dollars and Cents presented by North Main Financial. I'm your host, Joshua Dobie. Thank you so much for hanging with us. As I mentioned, second quarter, football reference. Now, producer Bill, we often talk here as we kick off the second quarter of each week's Dollars and Cents show, remembering that it is a football reference and paying attention to all things sports in this instance, having to do with football season. I may or may not have, well, asked Google exactly how many days, hours, and minutes it is until the first college football game. I should say Division I college football game.
I'm a numbers guy. Lay it on me.
You know, and I am too. And so, because I say each week, because I don't want to, I guess I don't want to sound too crazy that that we're 1 week closer. We may or may not be exactly 113 days and 20 hours approximately from the first Division One college football game for this year. So just in case you have a big calendar that you're putting red X's on it,
yep,
just
want
to make you aware. Okay.
It's a nice advent calendar I got.
That's exactly right. It's going to be a big day, right. And we're going to track it the whole way there. But at any rate, thank you so much for hanging with us here into the second quarter here on Dollars and Cents. And boy, the first quarter there, we had Apple. We had Cocoa. Now, Apple, I'm talking about in terms of the technology company, because then I put Cocoa right next to it. Sounds like we only talked about food there in the first quarter. Cocoa, we were talking about on the commodities end of things, pricing-wise, significant pullback, about 40, almost 50% off of the highs there, starting to normalize a little bit, certainly relative to the huge spike in pricing that we saw there several months ago. We also talked about Tesla. I mean, hard to argue that Tesla has been transformative in so many ways, but they are going through let's call it the more challenging ends of the growth business cycle, as they have announced not only a reduction in overall workforce, but now this past week reducing, almost completely eliminating the supercharger group, meaning both on the production side and the sales side of things, so that we're going to see far fewer new superchargers here, at least in the short run, those Tesla superchargers that you know that are out there, and ways for you to charge not only your Tesla, but also other electric vehicles as well. All right. So we got Cocoa, we got Apple, we got Tesla. Good segue here. All right, horsey sauce. Yes, I am talking about Arby's. Yes, I am. Horsey sauce. Now, if you are a very amateurish connoisseur like I am, you are very familiar with Arby's. I'm the more traditional beef and cheddar kind of person, but I know that they have a whole collection of options there on the menu. Saw recently, you may have seen this news as well. This just kind of came across my radar screen here in the last day or so, that Arby's is in collaboration with the pop singer Beyonce. So I guess Beyonce is going to be coming out with a new album. I'll admit to high level ignorance on that. I'm not aware of that album, but Arby's said that's coming out soon. At any rate, on the album cover apparently is a picture of a horse owned by Beyonce. So there is a collaboration now between Beyonce and Arby's, where there is going to be a special limited edition horsey sauce coming up in distribution. It's not out there yet, so don't rush to Arby's yet looking for it. You know, I mean, you can do that actually if you say that you heard it on Dollars and Cents. That part's okay. But if it's not quite out there in distribution yet, but it is a Chardonnay infused horsey sauce. Now, producer Bill, we were talking offline here before the segment. Chardonnay-infused horsey sauce. Now, I have to say, first, full disclosure, horsey sauce has been around a long time. I am a fan of horsey sauce. Chardonnay-infused horsey sauce, your thoughts?
There aren't many, and yet there are so many. It's one of those things I was not expecting you to drop this on me today. Usually, I do get caught off guard by a few things. Usually, it's some numbers, but this one... What is it called again? Horsey Chardonnay
Chardonnay. Chardonnay like a name,
like a horse.
Yeah, not the normal Chardonnay spelling.
So. I'm not above it. I'm gonna go try it when it comes out. A reason to go to Arby's, sure.
Exactly. I don't like to close any doors before we open them. So let's give it a shot. We'll have to make a pilgrimage to Arby's whatever it comes out. But that one I've been trying to put together in my head, and maybe I'm just a little bit too old fashioned. I couldn't see the combination.
Yeah.
In my head there. But I, like you, it is absolutely not beneath me. I am more than happy to give it a couple of shots to see how it goes. So anyhow, if you're an Arby's fan and you see horsey sauce that is Chardonnay infused, and they spelled Chardonnay. There you go, producer Bill. And the Chardonnay is spelled incorrectly. Well, now you know. It's because they're collaborating there with Beyonce. All right, so good segue from that then, especially if we're eating too much at Arby's. Peloton, right? So Peloton, very well known name, and they went public So Peloton, ticker symbol Paul Terry Oscar Nancy, not a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold Peloton. Peloton went public in 2019, actually just before the pandemic shutdowns. And they became, from a stock standpoint, certainly what became a group of stocks that became known as pandemic darlings. Now, when I say pandemic darlings, I'm not saying that to take away from the seriousness of what was the pandemic, but rather to say that there were a collection of publicly traded companies during the time of the pandemic, which did exceptionally well. And Peloton was among them. I mean, for the obvious reasons, they went public in 2019 there. And as the pandemic shutdowns came into play, they were selling, meaning they, Peloton, were selling more bikes than they could produce, literally. It was an amazing phenomenon to take in. And there was just an overwhelming amount of demand. And that was reflected in the stock price. Stock price topped out, I want to say, during that time, in the $160 per share range, roughly, at that time. I mean, it was a great time. If you were one who had bought at the IPO or had bought early on, certainly it turned out to be, in that short run, a very profitable kind of investment. Well, it's been very different since that time. Peloton has encountered a number of different challenges from a business standpoint, challenges with being able to maintain strength of pricing, especially as other competitors have come into that arena. And then they decided that they would actually offload. This was about a year or so ago when they changed some personnel in the C-suite at Peloton. They decided that they were going to move more from hardware manufacturing to being more of a software company, meaning that they were going to develop and maintain and enhance the software kind of experience that you have when you own a Peloton. And so they offloaded a significant amount of the production aspect to third parties relative to the actual bikes themselves. But what we have seen here, up to and including this most recent announcement that came through this week, even that kind of shift has not been very beneficial for them. So the CEO is stepping down. He's going to remain in an advisory capacity, but it was announced the CEO is going to be stepping down. They announced another layoff of approximately 400 additional employees. This is on top of about a 500-person reduction in force announced several months ago. So they're continuing to cut significantly into their employee force. And also, and this is an important reminder, especially for what we talk about here on Dollars and Cents with some regularity, is the stock price. So you heard me say that it topped out there during its all-time high, about $160-plus a share, right around that range. Since that time, the stock price has declined, and this includes this most recent flutter up, this increase in price that we saw here in the last couple of days. Including that, it still has come down approximately 90% off of its high, 90% off of its high. I say that not to gloat at all, certainly in Peloton's misfortunes from a stock standpoint, but to be reminding of you, and I think this is part of our responsibility here on Dollars and Cents, as we're talking about all things economic and financial, that to remind it, not all stocks go up. And it's also not true that because a stock goes down in value, that it's a good buy. So it's very important to keep that kind of thing in mind. We talk about doing in the analysis, and we say things, you know, almost like boilerplate, but yes, we have to say them, but also because it's true that it's not true that every stock is a good for somebody just because it happens to have gone up or down in value. Everybody's situation is indeed unique, and it's important to do your own due diligence, your own analysis, and if you're working with an advisor to get their input and insight as well as to whether it does make sense for you. And then to have discipline, not only about when you buy, but when and if you sell. So very, very important to keep that kind of thing in mind. Peloton's an easy example because it had such a huge increase in value and a huge decrease in value here. But it's an important reminder as we're thinking on these kinds of things when it comes to how we look at our portfolios, those things that we own, and being as honest as we can about why we own them or don't own them. Very good example there. So Peloton continued to go through some challenging times. We'll continue to watch them. Maybe it's going to be a takeover candidate. There was some noise there for a while that a group like even Apple or Amazon may buy Peloton. That's gone away. Haven't heard that news on the street here recently. But for a while, there was some supposition that maybe that would happen, primarily for the database of users, meaning those folks who have signed up for Peloton subscriptions. That data, those connections being very valuable to a possible buyer of Peloton, not really buying the bikes themselves, or even the software itself are really buying that database. So very interesting to see what has real value there. And we see that a lot, whether we're talking about bikes or televisions or laptops or cameras, those kinds of things can very often become commoditized very hard to keep strong pricing there. Apple's been the anomaly. Apple's been able to keep strong pricing throughout the years on their hardware. Most companies, very, very hard as more competition comes into play. All right, let's keep moving on. What's hot here? I told you it's earnings season. There's a lot going on here. I'm going to go again to one of the biggest ones that's out there and talk about Walmart. We're going to branch this over into the third quarter as well. But Walmart coming out with a very big push on a private label push end of things, talking about several hundred products here called Better Goods. Walmart, the largest by volume grocery store here in the country, now coming out with another private label called Better Goods. We're going to be watching that. That's going to be big. It's going to change the landscape for how products are offered at Walmart on the grocery store end of things. And then if you're a Walmart shopper for grocery, you're going to see them. This is going to be happening here over the next year or so. So we're definitely going to be watching that. Well, friends, I'm going to take a break and a deep breath here as we hear from our sponsors. Appreciate you hanging with us here on Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial.
Keep it right here. Dollars and Cents with certified financial planner Joshua Dobie. We'll return shortly on 105.9, 100.7 WSIC. Call now to speak with certified financial planner Joshua Dobie at 844-STUDIO-4. It's Dollars and Cents on 105.9, 100.7 WSIC.
Hello and welcome back to Dollars and Cents presented by North Main Financial. I'm your host, Joshua Dobie. Thank you so much for hanging with us. Second half of today's show, sprint run, 25 minutes, 40 seconds until you get to that 5 o'clock hour here. And I appreciate so much you spending that time with us here on Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial, as we're giving attention to and really just talking about all things economic and financial. We spend a lot of time talking about companies, individual companies here in the What's Hot segment end of things. We're going to keep going. It's earnings season. And I say that not because I want to be unnaturally positive or unnaturally negative on any one particular company as we're going through that, but hopefully the companies that we're bringing to you can give you some indication as you're putting all of this information together and as you're listening to us here on Dollars and Cents to get an idea about where we are economically. Because we don't just bring the, you know, the good stories here. We bring the tough ones as well about things that are sitting out there. And so hopefully by putting all of that together, again, that can be beneficial and helpful to you. All right, let's go a little bit local here, at least local insofar as Charlotte region is concerned. And this is not a publicly traded company, but some business news that came out here recently talking about a group and that just recently was bought actually by a larger franchise group out of Texas. This group's called Clean Juice. Clean Juice, you may be familiar with them. They do organic juices, clean foods, smoothies, all those good kinds of things. They were started locally here in the Charlotte region and then expanded pretty rapidly. Actually, I believe at their peak, they were up over 130-odd stores that they had. And they had some challenges with some of their franchisees. Not going to go into the details on that end of things. But the number of stores shrunk pretty notably, I believe, at least as of the time of the news report, had somewhere in the 70 to 80 stores that were still in working order. And at any rate, a group from Texas called Brix, B-R-I-X, actually made an offer to buy them. And it has been accepted as the owners of Clean Juice have come out and said, now, Producer Bill, are you a Clean Juice guy? Is that a place that you frequented for anything?
I think I have dabbled in the Clean Juice. Yes.
Okay. All right.
I'm a fan.
I've done that a couple of times as well. Yeah. And so just kind of interesting to see it because again, very, very popular, very, very, large amount of growth on a relative basis. All right. So we're talking about starting at one store and getting up over 130 stores. Yeah. That's a lot of growth and it happened in a relatively short amount of time. So it's interesting to see it. And interesting to see that it's now been sold to this group from Texas. What's that going to mean for the remaining 75 stores? Don't know. Because this group out of Texas, they have several other banners as well. I believe they have, with the addition of Clean Juice, they have 7 or 8 different banners, including one that I knew from many years ago up in the Northeast, Friendly's Restaurants. Great ice cream, by the way, if you've never been to a Friendly's restaurant.
The best.
But, yeah, I mean, so you're familiar as well.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Yeah, good stuff there, and good sandwiches as well. And so Friendly's is under their banner there. Red Mango, Orange Leaf Teas, and several others as well. So that's often the way these franchise groups work. As the groups get larger, very often they will acquire several different banners, not just a single banner. It's not always true, but certainly that happens with some regularity, especially in this day and age, to diversify some of that risk. And so again, Clean Juice being brought by this group Bricks out of Texas. Be interesting to see what that's going to mean. All right, let's pivot a little bit. I'm going to come back to What's Hot because we've got tons of stuff there. But I also want to spend time on this segment, which we've been using here over the last several months. And it's the segment we call What to Know. Now, it's kind of generic in terms of its description, and it's meant to be generic because we want it to be broad-based in terms of the kinds of things that we bring to you on What to Know. And the implication being what to know from perhaps a personal financial standpoint. And we go into some subjects that you may think are very, very elementary. And I understand that. If you're one who watches the markets and you're heavily involved in your personal financial space, or you've been managing those things for a long time, I get that some of the things we may be talking about here are elementary. But I'll tell you, our experience at North Main Financial is a lot of these things, folks sometimes are just afraid to ask because they think that, quote, everybody knows. And it's not true that everybody knows. I mean, we're doing this all day, every day at North Main Financial Group. And there are things that come up constantly, which are either brand new or different variations of an old kind of structure. It's a constant learning curve for us and requires a tremendous amount of time. So it's very understandable that it may or may not be on your radar screen. So that's why we take some time on this segment, What to Know, looking at, again, what may be some more straightforward kinds of maybe even ordinary sorts of subjects, but perhaps some things that you had on your mind, and hopefully that may even be helpful to you. If not today, then at some point in the future. Could be talking mortgages, and specifically residential mortgages. And mortgages, if you are not aware, a mortgage is when you take out a loan to be able to purchase, in this instance, a personal residence or a place where you may live. It can also be used to buy an investment property. So maybe you're buying a beach condo or a house in the mountains, and you may use it personally, or you may rent it out through the various services that are out there, or do it yourself. So we're looking at mortgages. Mortgages, again, a loan which is taken out to be able to purchase, in this instance, what we're talking about, a personal residence. Now, there are a whole lot of parameters that go into place for that, but generally speaking, there is a qualification process to be able to secure a mortgage. And there are a collection of factors that come into play. And the real reason why we're bringing this up, really twofold, in talking about mortgages here on the What to Know segment, two reasons why. One, the rates increased here again. They're up now on average over 7%. When I say 7%, that means 7% interest per year on your outstanding mortgage debt or whatever your balance is throughout the course of a year. So different, very different than what it was here a couple of years ago. And you know that if you have a mortgage, or if you were looking at mortgages then and looking at them now, or you've looked at them in the past, very different landscape. However, if you have more graying hair and thinning hair, which both are true for me, you know that actually a 7% mortgage is actually getting us, quote, back to normal relative to the historical level of where interest rates are. So while it is significantly higher than where we've been here, even over the last couple of years, it is actually getting closer to normal. 7.5% is actually here over the last 40, now almost 50 years, what has been an average mortgage rate. So we're kind of getting back to that normalized kind of space. So I'm saying that because of that. And then I'm saying also with regards to interest rates and with regards to mortgages, because the underwriting process shifts, meaning that there are several factors that are involved with mortgages that evolve and change over time. But some big things that stay pretty constant. One is your credit score. If you're familiar with your credit score, there are three large credit rating agencies who all keep a file on us, and they do. It's a credit file. So anytime you have a credit card, or you have a student loan, or a car loan, or a mortgage, or anything really that is financial and registered, there's sometimes other interest in terms of other financial instruments that are out there, there's a credit file that is kept on your behalf. And based upon your history of making payments and your history of satisfying old debts or paying off your credit card each month, there is a score pattern. And without getting too granular with it, generally the high end of that score pattern is in the 800s. And but you can have also a very low credit score if you've had bankruptcy in your past, or you have not, or if you defaulted on a loan or defaulted on a credit card, you may have a credit score that's in the 300 to 400 range of things. But generally speaking, when you're looking at mortgages, you need to be in the high 600s, 700s, and of course 800s is the best place to be whenever you're looking at qualifying for the best rates when it comes to mortgages. So something important to keep in mind. There are other things to keep in mind as well. Sometimes, especially, and we're seeing this in this environment right now, sometimes there's variability across different companies, meaning different mortgage companies, different financial entities, whether it's a bank, a credit union, or a mortgage financing company, they may offer different rates. We're starting to see that, especially with where rates have increased here so much over the last couple of years, that there is some level of divergence in terms of what different companies are offering. Sometimes also, there is rate variance based upon geographically where you're looking to buy. Now, this isn't a hard and fast rule, but it is true, and we've seen this because we have clients all over the country, literally, that that sometimes there is variability based upon geography. And you know, sometimes if there's considered to be a space that is more higher risk in terms of what the financing company is offering, rates are going to be higher, even if you have a good credit score, and even if you're making a good down payment. That's something really to keep in mind, especially in this kind of space where I know there's been a lot of hue and cry about where mortgage rates are right now. Folks, this is actually more normal. This is actually a more normalized kind of environment than what we had here for the last 15 years where, my gosh, I mean, mortgages were almost free. I mean, there were just millions done in the 3% end of things, some even in the 2% range, nothing, some even lower than that. When we're looking at the variability in rates and how low that they actually were during that time, as much as it was enjoyable for folks getting mortgages in that space, that's not normal. And that's not even, I know, a little bit counterintuitive. It's not even healthy relative to the environment, meaning to the economic environment. We actually need some level of interest in order to keep the buying intensity at more normalized spaces. So I know a little bit counterintuitive, but definitely something to keep in mind when we're thinking about mortgages overall economically and then as we're applying for them. Well, friends, again, I appreciate so much you hanging with us here on Dollars and Cents presented by North Main Financial. Hang with us as we hear from our sponsors and go into the fourth quarter here on WSIC.
We'll have more of Dollars and Cents with certified financial planner Joshua Doby following these brief messages on 105.9 100.7 WSIC. Making your money make sense. Dollars and Cents with CFP Joshua Doby on 105.9 100.7 WSIC.
Hello and welcome back to Dollars and Cents presented by North Main Financial. I'm your host, Joshua Doby. Thank you so much for hanging with us. Fourth quarter, stretch run here, 11 minutes, 57 seconds until you get to that 5 o'clock hour. Appreciate you hanging with us here as we talk about all things economic and financial here on Dollars and Cents. What we're talking about, just as we were going to break there, we're talking about the what to know segment and those kinds of things, which again, maybe seeming to some of you a little bit more elementary in terms of the concepts or, you know, but that, it's in our experience, you know, it's not a good idea to make assumptions about what folks know and don't know. So we sometimes want to break it down into very simplistic kind of terms, not because, you know, folks should know it or even that they do. We're dealing with all this stuff all day, every day. And like I said, we're bumping into things constantly, which are new, different, even old concepts, which get repackaged into different kinds of things. So we sometimes just need to slow down a little bit and take a look at those things that are happening around us financially. We were talking about the mortgage market. We were talking about the fact that, yes, we're in the 7% range when it comes to residential mortgages right now. And I know compared to recent history, that's notably above where we were. But if you extend your vision just beyond the last 15 years and say, look at the last 40 or 50 years, we're actually right in line with where we would expect to be. It's a very normalized kind of environment. So it'll be interesting to see how the market continues to digest that. Along the lines of real estate, so we're talking residential, let me pivot here to commercial. And you've heard us talk a lot about commercial real estate, specifically Class A, let's call it high-rise, office tower, urban area kinds of things, downtown centers, if you will. We have that in Charlotte. We got it in Pittsburgh. We got it in Chicago, in Miami, New York. You know, all the usual suspects that have a whole multitude of high-rise office buildings. You've heard us talk about the challenges that they've had with vacancy. And specifically, you know, we hit a 40-year high here relative to vacancy in those high-rise office towers, not all commercial space, but in those high-rise office towers around the country, bumping into 20%. And 20% is a lot of vacancy, because you're talking about tens of millions of square feet, which are unoccupied. And there are several reasons for that, not the least of which is because that post-pandemic, so many positions now are either work from home or hybrid positions. When I say hybrid, I mean a couple of days in the office, a couple of days not in the office. So not nearly the same kind of usage of that office space as there was pre-pandemic. We're still working through how that's going to look, but we're starting to see some of the ripple effects of folks not coming back to the office in the same ways that they were 4 or 5 years ago. And this is the next one. So we just got some data here through some industry white paper kinds of things that we're in the highest level of distressed commercial debt on high-rise office buildings. Again, not all across the board. I'm looking at the skyscraper kind of office buildings, Class A office buildings, the highest amount of distressed debt since 2012. Now, 2012, we were coming out of the whole economic mess of 2008, 2009. Still, the ripple effect of that was being felt in 2012. So that's really the marker, if you will, of the low point where we are right now. But we're by most industry estimates, we're between $35 and $40 billion worth of distressed commercial loan debt. We're seeing that in some of the earnings reports here, especially for our, let's call them super regional banks, the big, big banks, the money center banks, JP Morgan Chase, Bank of America's of the world, Wells Fargo's of the world, not in this same kind of space. But for the more regional banks, New York Community Bank is an easy target to bring into this conversation because they have had their stock price just decimated here over the last couple of months because of the challenge that is perceived by the market in them getting through their large portfolio of commercial high-rise office tower debt, which may default or may need to be renegotiated in ways which aren't favorable to the bank. And so there's some of this out there. I don't want to raise unnatural concern, but we continue to see data which supports the idea that the whole commercial office space from a financial standpoint is going to continue to evolve into a different world. And so when we saw this, these data points come across here indicating the amount of distressed debt, when I say distressed debt, by the way, we probably should put some guardrails on that. That can be debt that is anywhere from delinquent payments to foreclosure. And there's a large gap there. So there's a lot of space in between what I'm talking about. It could be somebody who just hasn't made a payment for the last 90 days, to where we are all the way out where the bank is moving through foreclosure process. And like I said, there's a lot of space in there, with especially with commercial office space. There's constant renegotiation. There's constant refinancing kinds of discussions that are going on. Sidebar, just as I was talking about residential debt, though, on the commercial loan end of things, the refinancing discussions have become significantly more challenging. Because you know, a lot of those notes that were out there, again, 3, 4, 5% range, now they're needing to be refinanced in the 6, 7, 8% range. And of course, that's a much higher cost of capital if you're the landlord. And we're not talking about an individual house here, but we're talking about tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars with regards to the skyscraper value. So we're talking about monstrous loans that are sitting out there. And again, if you don't have tenants who are helping you to, or if not completely covering off on your debt service, well, that comes out of your pocket as the landlord. So a very, very big deal, something that we're watching here very closely, and certainly a lot of indication about where we are economically. And that's why we continue to line up the data points here as we're looking at all things real estate related, but certainly with regards to residential and then the high-rise office tower data that we're seeing here. All right, let's keep going along this line of things. We're talking about markets. We're talking about where things are right now. Boy, kind of interesting, right? As measured by our stock markets here, 4 out of the last 5 weeks have been negative as measured by our most popular stock indices. Very interesting to see that happen as last year overall, very, very positive, not straight up, but very, very positive overall. First quarter of this year, very strong, especially as measured by the S&P 500 index, which was up over 10%. Again, from January 1st through March 31st. Now, though, some cooling off. And I look at a company like Apple, whose earnings are coming out this afternoon, and I use them because they're a huge company, but one of the most widely held stocks out there. I mean, their stock is down about 12% year to date. And that was before earnings. That may be different even right now, as of the time that we're discussing this. but it was down about, since January 1st, about 12%. And I say that, again, for folks to be reminded that just because we have good companies who are doing good things and growing and all that good stuff, doesn't mean that their stock price just goes straight up. By the way, when good companies are going through tough times and their stock price is declining, it doesn't mean necessarily that it's always going to go down. Now, it might, but it's not necessarily so. So it's very, very important to keep that kind of thing in mind. We talk about doing due diligence. We talk about making sure that you understand why you own what you own. Big, big deal. Don't just do it because either your friend's doing it or somebody else has made a lot of money doing it. That may work for a little while. I mean, it's possible that that even could be a benefit for you over the long term. But very rarely is that the case. You want to know what you own and then why you own it. Very, very important. And to constantly reevaluate those kinds of things. It's not a set it and forget it kind of scenario, at least not in my end of the world. And I know I'm biased when it comes to that, but especially as we're talking about the markets, you want to understand where we are. I mean, here we are, we've been talking about interest rates here on the debt side of things with regards to mortgages and commercial loans, those kinds of things. But also on the savings side of things, when you're looking at high yield money markets, CDs, treasuries, I mean, we have a much different landscape now, meaning a greater possibility to have higher interest rates on our savings accounts, like high yield money markets, like CDs, like treasuries. I mean, for years, almost a decade and a half, it was amazing. I mean, you earned practically nothing. It was a bad joke whenever we would talk with folks about how much they would earn on their savings accounts or money markets at the bank. Now, not all accounts have increased their interest rates that they're paying, but many of them have. And so we're seeing options out there that are 4% or even as much as 5% per year in terms of yield, whether we're talking about CDs or money market accounts, even treasuries, even the two-year treasury this week bumped again back above 5% per year. So definitely some options there for savings as well. It's not a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold any of those kinds of things. Everybody's situation is unique, but definitely something to keep in mind, especially when we're looking at the overall market landscape. Again, it's not me saying, and I feel like I've been talking a little bit too negative here about where the overall market is, but I hopefully I'm coming to you. It's just talking about where things are at this point. Just like whenever things were going red hot and positive and all we heard about was, you know, computer chip this and semiconductor that, and it was Meta and it was Nvidia and it was Amazon. Again, these are fine companies that have done very, very well for a long period of time. But it doesn't mean that their stock just goes straight up forever. It just doesn't. I mean, there's a law of large numbers that kicks in to where they are. Apple, again, I feel like I'm picking on them a little bit, but it is earnings day for them. I mean, Apple is a multi-trillion dollar market cap company. You just can't grow at 25% a year ad infinitum. You just can't. The law of large numbers will eventually catch up with you. So it's important to keep that kind of thing in mind, also relative to tempering expectations. Because you want to make sure that you're more in line with what historical averages are. Not that past performance is necessarily an indication of future results, but it does give you a benchmark, or at least an historical understanding, about where companies have been. And that's important. That's especially important when things are going either up for a long period of time or down for an extended period of time. Very, very important to keep that kind of thing in mind, because you hear me talk about this a lot. I know we, the investing public, the financial public, we think in straight lines. We do it all the time. I've been in this business very nearly 3 decades, and we think in straight lines constantly. When things are doing well for an extended period of time, we, the investing public, think that things are going to go well forever. We do. By the way, same thing in the inverse. When things are negative for an extended period of time, we, the investing public, believe everything's going to be negative forever. It's an amazing phenomenon because it literally moves in cycles. It is predictable as the sun rising in the east. But we do the same thing over and over again. And we saw a little bit of that. We saw that kind of creeping in a little bit, especially in the first quarter of this year, looking at the markets. We definitely saw where there was some assumption about certain companies or certain sectors just continuing to be great forever. Not true. Apple's the easy example because they're in the negative. Other companies have continued to do well. But we want to be mindful. We want to be cautious whenever we're looking at expectations going forward. Well, friends, we're rapidly approaching the end of our time together here on Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial. We're going to do a lightning fast recap here. Arby's Horsey Sauce. I know you weren't expecting that. Check it out. See if you like Chardonnay and Horsey Sauce going together. along the food line end of things, Walmart coming out with more private label, and it's going to be very interesting to see what Apple's earnings are here this evening. Well, friends, I appreciate so much your time and hanging with us here on Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial. Till the next time, I'll talk with you soon.